Sean Kelly, I suppose it's very appropriate that you're joining us on this Terrace Talk internet worldwide website, because as Dean Cumming, President of the Gaelic Athletic Association, you have been travelling the world, and you're only just back from New Zealand. You're a much travelling man for the association.
Firstly, I want to congratulate yourself on going on the web. It's a long way from the Legion Field to worldwide web. A bit like myself, a long way from Kilcumming Field to travelling the world. And as you say, I have been more or less around the world now in my capacity as chairman of the overseas. And particularly this year, when I was elected president, the Archer Hoare and the Utron told me to avail of the opportunity to get to know what was happening in the GA, just not just in Ireland, but worldwide. And I had the privilege recently of going to, first of all, to Thailand for the Asian Gaelic Games. And I went on there from that to New Zealand, to Auckland, for the Australasian Gaelic Games. And they were both wonderful experiences. And it's great to see the Irish people, and indeed non-Irish people now, playing the games in far-flung places with the same fervour and commitment as we'd have here at home.
How widespread are Gaelic Games throughout the world, Sean? And you said non-Irish playing it. Explain that to us.
Yeah, in Asia now, for instance, they would organise a seven-a-side, and these would be largely highly intelligent, highly educated Irish people who would be sent over by companies, maybe on a 3 or 4 year contract, to places like Hong Kong and Singapore, Shanghai, Dubai, Kuwait. And they wanted to express, I suppose, their nationalism and their sense of belonging to Ireland in a very practical way. And the way they chose to do it was through organising Gaelic Games, which they organise every year in Thailand. But many of them wouldn't have enough to make up a team, because they have ladies' teams and men's teams, and they would have invited their friends out, and these would be Moldovans, Chinese, Japanese, anybody. And it was great to see all the different nationalities playing there. The same, and even more interestingly, down in Auckland, for instance, they have the senior games, men's and women's, and the ladies' final was largely between a team from Australasia and an Irish team based in Sydney. And the Victorian team, which was all Australian, won that final. The minor final, which of course none of them would be Irish, was between Western Australia and Auckland, and it was the best game I saw in my travels.
Sean, I'm fascinated by what you're telling me, because I must say this now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'd say the people at home in Ireland don't know all this is going on.
You're dead right. And one of the things, unfortunately, about the GAA, I suppose, we're all so busy in our own lives and so busy in organising whatever we're involved in, we hardly know what's happening next door. You know, there's a club which says Legion there now. They had, for instance, a seven-a-side tournament during the summer. I never knew even it existed until my own young fellow was playing in it. And he came home with a medal, told me all about it. So if we don't know what's happening next door, it's hard to know what's happening around the world. But it's because the GAA is so busy. There's activity taking place everywhere. And there's huge activity going on worldwide, from North America, Canada, New York, all over Britain, Scotland, Europe, Asia, as I mentioned, and Australasia, taking Australia and New Zealand. And funny enough, when I was out there, I had a meeting with the Australasian board, and they showed me a 10-minute video of Gaelic football being organised in New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, and it was on television. It was on every week for about a half an hour, and this is all natives of Papua New Guinea who were looking for a new game, and the game they chose was Gaelic football. And there's a big guy on it, explaining what the rules were about. And we saw them playing away there every night, the 6 nights in succession, and I think to the Tuesday or Wednesday night. So there's great potential there.
In your foreign travels, Sean, how much publicity are the GAA getting in local press, radio, media and television, and what have you been doing out foreign to publicise it?
Again, it's limited enough, I suppose, because again, if something is going on in the country in terms of what's going on generally in that country, the Irish involvement would be small enough. But a lot of them have local radio stations. And I did a lot of interviews now. I did interviews with 2 different stations down in Auckland. I did interviews over in Thailand. And when I was in America, I did a number of interviews with programs in Chicago. That's where the finals were there. But a lot of these would actually be Irish people who would have set up a program. Something similar to yourself. And Terrace Talk, that have once a week, and that interview various people from Ireland, and when I was out there, they interviewed me because I'm involved in Gaelic Games. So there is a fair amount of publicity, but I think we're only at the tip of the iceberg yet. I think there's tremendous opportunity to develop our games worldwide, particularly Gaelic football, because it's easier to play, I suppose, and it's less costly. and particularly the ladies, I think, love it. I've spoken to people now from Canada, from Australia, ladies who would have played with, say, rugby in their own games, and they gave them up in favour of Gaelic games because they found it more suitable to themselves and they enjoyed it more. And of course, better crack with the Irish pubs and all that too.
Sean, my experience of travelling, playing games and been travelling with teams out from, and the games mean more to the immigrants than they do to anybody else. In particular, the farther away you are, the more your national games mean to you.
Oh, you're spot on there. Actually, it's amazing. There'll be people who'll be brought up here at home. They might never go into a game at all, kick for a little football or hurling. They'll go abroad and you'll find them involved. They'll start playing. I met a fellow out in Washington. He never kicked a football here, and he's been playing football out there for 10 or 15 years, and he's the main man organising it. But again, I think it's, as you said, when you go abroad, you probably appreciate what you have at home more. And the one way they can really express themselves is through Gaelic football, and they have a link back then to what's happening in Ireland, and they get involved in the matches in Croke Park, and it gives them a great identity, and they're very proud of it, and we should be very proud of them for the way they're promoting our game. And it's wonderful because it's not just the people who have to immigrate, and thankfully there are very few of those now. These are all well-educated guys who look at the world, see what's happening in the world, and they say, what we have in Ireland is better than they have around the world, and they want to be part of that.
I suppose by virtue of the fact, Sean, that I'm sitting here with you this morning at 9 o'clock doing this interview in your own home in Fossa in Killarney, County Kerry, in Ireland, for the internet, world web site, it only shows you how things are developing and how the gospel, as the fellow said, is going to be spread, and we're only touching the tip of the iceberg in this respect.
Absolutely, and it just shows how small the world has got, I suppose, that everything that's happening now is actually available through the web. And I think in that way, people become more aware of what's happening. And you'll be surprised again, because people are tuning into the web far more, particularly in the last couple of years. And of course, all the youngsters now are the same with computers now. They will be the football on go. They can just tap a button and they can get through to anything. And that, of course, is going to give us great access to people. And I think if we utilise that, we can develop the games much further. In actual fact, I'm having two conferences over next fortnight with the overseas, and when that's over, I hope to drop some kind of a plan to progress the association over the next 3 years, and to see how we at national level, Croke Park, etc., can help to promote the games, both hurling and football.
Sean, before we leave this overseas chat, could you see interviews like this going out on the likes of Terrace Talk web being of great help to, as the fellow says, spreading the gospel of the GA? Can you see more of it happening even on the Terrace Talk web?
Absolutely, because every now and then I come across a person and they say to me, they saw this on the web. Even when I was down in Auckland now, a guy interviewed me and I was absolutely amazed at his knowledge of things that I had said and interviews I'd given. He picked it all up on the GA website. So there are people all over the world we might never meet or hear of. They'll tune into this, they'll keep in touch with it, and they'll be watching what's happening. And as you said, they'll be spreading the gospel. And it's up to us then to utilise that. And also up to us as well to kind of give recognition to these people and tell them, look, they're welcome. We're delighted to have them. And the Gaelic Games are not just for Irish people, they're for the whole world. And the more people that we can make happy by playing Gaelic Games, the better.
Sean, you're the first Kerryman ever to be elected as president of the Gaelic Athletic Association. You'll be taking up office next March with the help of God. Was it always your ambition? And what does it mean to you? What has it meant to you since you were elected?
Yeah, it's great, of course. And, you know, everywhere I go, people say, and you're the first Kerryman. Isn't that amazing? That's what they all say to you. And I think people are delighted, actually, that there's a Kerryman president. Not because of me, but because of the fact that Kerry has such a great reputation in Gaelic Games and, of course, in football, with 32 All-Irelands. And only recently I was speaking to a number of people abroad, and the night I was elected, they said they had a party. They had intended finishing at around 11 o'clock, and they went down till 6 o'clock in the morning and went straight to work. So it meant a lot to people. And for me, though, I'm more conscious of the challenge of it. I'm more conscious of the fact that there's great responsibility, and I want to ensure the Gaelic Games progress, and I want to get people involved in every capacity, and particularly from grassroots level up, so that everybody who wants to play Gaelic Games will have football and hurling to play. And then at the higher level, we'll be able to project a great image and continue to develop the game in Ireland and overseas. So there's a big challenge there, and that's what I'm tuning into now more than any of the sense of honour and so forth, which is great, of course.
You're probably coming into the association at the most challenging time of all. That would be my opinion anyway, Sean, because, and we'll touch on these subjects, you have the issue of Croke Park, the Gaelic Athletics Association, magnificent stadium in Dublin, opening up to other codes. It's confined to Gaelic games, more or less, at the moment. And then you have the issue of players looking to be paid. Could you discuss those two issues?
Yeah, the first one, Croke Park. I have never hidden my own views on that, and I'm not going to change because I'm president. I accept that the policy of the association is not to allow any Gaelic games being played in Croke Park at the moment. But personally, I have no problem with that being changed, because I don't see any point in having that magnificent stadium closed basically for 9 months of the year. And if we can accommodate other sports or other activities during that time and keep it active and keep it alive, it's a good thing. It's like having a house. You're better off to have a house that's been lived in than a house that's not been lived in, because a house that's not been lived in goes down. It costs money. Whereas if it's been lived in, it's keeping it fresh and everything else. So I'd view Croke Park in the same way. And I would expect that issue will be addressed again over the next couple of years. It's unfortunate at this point in time that it's linked with the European UEFA desire to, or not lack of desire, maybe it's the case, maybe, but certainly their decision regarding the European Championships. So the decision has to be reached by December. There is absolutely no way we can reach a decision by December, because it has to go to National Congress. But that apart, I would think that it will be addressed. And I think that maybe more and more people are saying that if we can accommodate other sports without doing any damage to our own, that it might be the way to go, and I have no problem with that. The other one you asked me about, the players, obviously it's an issue, and one can be sympathetic to the players in the sense that their demands on players now are perhaps unrealistic in some ways. I think some managers are overdoing it. They're making players train 4 or 5 nights a week at central venues, when they could be training maybe at local venues, and they wouldn't have to even have the travelling. It's a travelling, it's a killer. I mean, nobody minds going out 4 or 5 nights a week, but this is the travelling, maybe 100 miles on top of that. That's killing players. And I'd be sympathetic to him in that instance. While that I wouldn't be in favour of pay for play, I don't really think the majority of players want it either. What they want really is to be respected and to be given expenses that will compensate them for the miles that they travel and so forth. So there are rules and regulations which everyone has to abide by. But I think that, again, there's room for maybe discussion and negotiation, and maybe we can come to some amicable solution. Because there's a known interest to have the players at loggerheads with officialdom, or vice versa. The way I look at it, we're all in the association, we're all equals, we're all trying to promote the game. The players that people matter most, be they under 12 players or under county players, they must all be treated properly.
Would you think, Sean, that in particular the All-Ireland Championships in both hurling and football, would you think that the players are really like they're being trained as professionals more than amateurs? You just mentioned that yourself there. Is the association in that respect, with in particular about the championships, is it getting too kind of semi-professional in the line of the training?
I think it's being overdone. I think you get the same results with perhaps less training. And certainly, since we moved to the calendar year, you know, the National League now starts in February, the All-Ireland is over in September. I don't see any point in the world in dogging players from September until at least Christmas. They should be given those 3 or 4 months off anyway to rewind the batteries, maybe to play away locally if they want and relax. But this idea of training 12 months of the year is ridiculous. Nobody could stick that. Even the professionals wouldn't have to do that. I mean, Ty Kennelly is a professional over in with the Sydney Swans in Australia, and he's home here for the last month or two, and he was able to do what he wanted to, play football if he wanted to, or not to play, as he so wished. So the idea of training 12 months a year is ridiculous. And I think in an amateur organisation, we may have to look at that and draw up some guidelines regarding what is allowed, what isn't allowed, obviously giving a certain amount of flexibility. But there's no sense in dogging players completely. And the other thing then you have, unfortunately, you'll have an inter-county manager who'll want his players every night, and then you might have some club manager who'll be obviously anxious to win the club championship, and they'll want the player to be there as well. And instead of being out 3 or 4 nights a week, he's expected to be out 7 nights a week. So there has to be just a bit of cop on using it, and a little bit of more respect and consideration for the players. I think managers at all levels should discuss with the players what they'll be comfortable with. And as I said, maybe instead of asking them to travel 100 or 200 miles, they could train at a local club and travel maybe once a week or so forth, And I think a lot of common sense could come into play, and you get the same results at the end of the day, maybe better results.
Sean, you mentioned Ticinelli there. Now, as we speak, we're in the middle of the two games, the compromise rule games between Australia and between Ireland. One was played last Sunday, the other one will be played next Sunday. We won't know what happened there. But last Sunday, it appeared to me, watching it on TV anyway, that there was an awful lot of rough play, heavy play. I don't think myself it's doing anything for Gaelic football. And if a lot of that stuff went on in Gaelic football, I think you'd see a lot of yellow and red cards. Can you see a future for the whole thing?
I would hope so. I think it's a great spectacle. Overall, the games are good. That's why the crowds are turning up to them. And the players love it. I was with the Irish team now last Saturday night in City West in Dublin, and I was speaking to North Boston, and I really think it's a great honour to play for Ireland. And it's the highest honour you can have, actually, in your sport, is to play for your country. I think that's a very important dimension. And I know the same applies to the AFL. They're so anxious to keep it going that they're actually sending an under 17 team to Ireland again next year, even though it was our turn to go down. But we weren't that anxious, so they're sending them back up here again next year. So they're very keen to keep it going as well, because they see it as, again, represents the country, it's promotion. And the public are responding in kind. And I think you're bound to have a certain amount of misunderstanding when you're trying to compromise two different codes. And there has been a tradition, unfortunately, a little bit of foul play, but I think that can be cleaned up. Overall, last Sunday, there wasn't any great damage done, but there was too much of a tendency for people to get involved, which they're never doing their own game. In actual fact, I was talking to Tyke Kennelly, as you mentioned, in the morning, and Tyke said to me that would never happen back in Australia, because they would have 9 cameras, and the 9 cameras are covering everybody right throughout the game, so that if you hit it off the ball, it went in late, when the referee didn't see you, the following morning it would be called before the board and it would be dicked. So it doesn't happen in their own game, and it doesn't happen in our game either. I mean, we have some great games this year. So I think it's just a question of sitting down together and say, it doesn't happen in Australian games, it doesn't happen in Gaelic football, why should it be happening here? So let's have a little bit of cop on now, cut this out, and play the game as a spectacle, because it's a great spectacle. It's wonderful when it's played well.
Sean, that's a very fair point, and it must be said that Gaelic football and Gaelic hurling, now in the last number of years since the yellow and red cards came in and everything has improved, television, everything, it's one of the greatest spectacles in the world. Both games.
Both games are superb. And I think hurling is absolutely amazing, and people that see it for the first time are absolutely enthralled by it. And only recently, when I was out in Thailand, the fellow came up to me with a scheme that he wants to develop hurling worldwide. Now, it's probably far-fetched maybe at this stage, but it just shows you the interest is there. And I taught him to come and see me, and we discussed it, because hurling is the national game. And I think that more and more people would play it if they had the expertise. But it's a question of getting hurlers and slitters and the rules of the game and helmets and so forth. But it's certainly a wonderful spectacle. And I think that there's great opportunities there for us to promote it as a spectacle worldwide, and to particularly promote on television, because people from Japan to Africa, South America, who see it for the first time are absolutely enthralled by it.
Sean, we're back to the worldwide spectre of Gaelic games again, and I must put this to you. Is it spreading more and more worldwide? You're travelling now all over the world. We're here at home and we don't know what's happening. Can you see the game spreading, and is it spreading?
Yeah, funny enough, I remember, I think about 4 years ago, when immigration started drying up completely, John McDonough was president that time, and I asked him one time in management, what was the likelihood of the future of Gaelic games, now that immigration was drying up and so forth. And the fear at that time was that Gaelic games would die out. But you see, I suppose you have to do something when your back is to the wall. The overseas people saw that immigration drying up, and now they're actually starting to promote the game in the schools and so forth. And for instance, in Australia, they've got what is known as accreditation, which allows you to take your game into the schools. Without that, you can't do it, and they didn't have that until now. They've now got it, and they'll be putting plans in place to play the game in the schools. Over in Birmingham, in Lancashire, the schools are trying out for Gaelic games, and they have a particular slot there, and they have thousands to claim them. The same has happened in Canada over the last number of months. And in Chicago, there's actually a Kerry girl there, Lisa Monsell, Lisa Fitzmaurice, she's been in the Ballyroe Hotel, and many more are doing great work there. Same as down in Rockland. So I think people are realising now the way to go is to promote the game. And as I said at the outset, Before we kind of kept the game to ourselves, now we're taking the game to the world, and I think if we take the game to the world will respond.
Turning back to home again, Sean, I must put it to you that with the Australians-Ireland games on at the moment, it's taking up two Sundays. And with the new system in the hurling and football, where the losers come back into it, the championship seem to go on the whole year. I would imagine myself that it is interfering with championships in the local counties and is holding up championships. And if it goes on the way it is going, it could be the death knell of championships in counties.
Well, there's obviously a new ball game, and before I see most counties were out after the first round. Half of them were gone after the first round, that was in the May, they could play their championships. But no, there's nobody gone really until in the June. So it's a question again of cutting your cloth according to your measure. I think the county boards will have to stand up and be responsible and say that the club championships and the club games at the bread and butter of the association and start playing games in between championship matches. The idea of postponing the entire championship until that Ireland series is over is not on, and I think more and more counties are going to realise that, and the GAA has given power to provincial councils now to keep an eye on what's happening at the local level and to ensure games are played, and I think that will have to happen. I mean, in fairness, Kerry, I've gone to All-Ireland and we're down to the semi-final of the championships. All our league games have been played, and I'd say the same is true of Cork. They have actually had finals over, and they're involved in hurling and football every year, so there's no excuse really if there's a small bit of goodwill and games can be played. I mean, a player can get injured training, a fortnight before a match as playing a game. And I'll make one very interesting point here. I remember reading an article by Liam Griffin prior to Kilkenny played in the All-Ireland semi-final, and everybody was saying that the championships, that the teams that won the provincial championships would be at a fierce disadvantage in playing the semi-finals because they had such a long layoff. And Liam Griffin made the point, he said that won't apply to Kilkenny because they played their county championships, so the games were sharp, and he was proven right. I think we'd better off to have players playing. What's the point in a player on a panel of 30 and he never plays a game? He's five o'clock playing with his club every week.
Sean, could you see, somebody pointed out a very good thing to me the other day, could you see it coming in the future where players, we'd say in Kerry, who can't get on the inter-county team, could be left to play with other counties in Munster?
It's something that has been mooted, and certainly I'm going to keep a very open mind on it because I'd love to see the weekly counties improving. And if a scheme can be brought into play whereby a number of players can be made available to another county, I'd have no problem with it. I know that some people would. But the more ideas we have out there to discuss, the better. And certainly the weaker counties need a leg up to have a chance of making progress, and that again is promoting the game. Look what he did for Armagh this year. You know, to win the All-Ireland for them the first time ever, not just for Armagh, but for all of Ulster and all the weaker counties. And I think a few little measures, maybe not the one you outlined, but something like that, can certainly help them. Because the more counties we've involved with a realistic chance of success, the better for us.
Sean Kelly, you were always a man that always promoted hurling when you were chairman of the Kerry County Board and when you were chairman of the East Kerry Board. You were always promoting hurling and pushing it more than anybody I ever saw. And we're in Kerry now, and the hurling in Kerry is at the low ebb. What we're talking about is, wouldn't it be great to see two fellas from Cork, or maybe one fella from Limerick, or a limited number of people coming in outside and helping Kerry hurling? Can you imagine going to see Kerry playing with three men up the centre, three of the best hurlers out of some other county?
Yeah, it might be just what's needed, because to give a great boost to the local players and to encourage them to train harder and take more pride in the jersey and give them a better standard of hurling and a better opportunity to win. And I think certainly a few little things like that could make an awful difference. I remember when I became involved first, the idea of having an outside trainer was thought to be absolutely ridiculous. And we brought down Con Roach first, and the response I got was tremendous. And then we got John Myler, he did a tremendous job. So maybe something else is needed now, and a few players that would be surplus to requirements in other counties, if they're willing to play for Kerry, why not? Certainly worth considering.
Despite the fact that they beat Kerry in the final, Sean, and Armagh won the All-Ireland, what has the winning of the All-Ireland meant to the association, by the winning by Armagh, and what has it meant to Armagh itself? You must be in touch with them up there.
I think it means everything to them, and I think it was summed up very well by the Armagh captain, Kieran McGeaney, when he said that some people wanted to become millionaires, they wanted to win the All-Ireland medal. And I think that it was the ultimate achievement for them. And I think everyone was delighted because, first of all, we think of Armagh, we think of Cross McGlynn, we think of the torture that went through there at the hands of the British Army for many years. We know of people that were shot because of their commitment to Gaelic games and nothing else. And yet, despite all that, they kept going. I suppose the vehicle by which they got expression and, I suppose, acceptability and recognition nationally and worldwide was through Gaelic football in particular. And they worked hard and they kept going and they never complained. And I think to win the All-Ireland really was like being in heaven for them. And they're delighted altogether. And they're delighted with Kerry as well, because we were so magnanimous in defeat. And I'm very proud of all the Kerry panel, from Paddy Shea to the players, and every person I met in Kerry. They were all delighted for Armagh, and they put their own disappointment aside. And that was great.
Sean, when you become president, what would would say top five priorities roughly would be for your term in office?
Well, I'd say number one is to ensure that more and more people play Gaelic games, ladies as well as men. I think we have a lot of work to do to give recognition and encouragement to the ladies in Ireland, the way they're getting it in some places overseas. Number two, I'd love to see the weaker counties that we just discussed being given a leg up to try and improve their standard and give more commitment. Number three, the schools have always been our bedrock. I think we'll have to continue to work in the schools, maybe look at new schemes, get more coaching going. That will be very important. Number four, obviously, to utilise the facilities we have, number one, and develop new facilities that are needed, particularly in urban areas where, you know, there's a great need now for pitches in new areas, and the cost of land is very difficult for them to meet, so that's a major problem. And I suppose finally is to keep every club going and establish new clubs, in particularly the growing urban areas, because our strength has always been, I suppose, in the rural clubs, but we've had some wonderful urban clubs, but this pace of change in urban areas now and the accelerating growth in terms of population means that we have to respond in kind. And through the SRC report, which we're discussing in only a little over a week now from now, that will decide an awful lot of what's going to happen. And I'm looking forward to implementing the whatever will be passed in the special Congress in 2 weeks' time in Dublin.
Sean, as we begin to finish up, I want to turn back to the ladies again, because a lot of people might be under the impression listening that ladies football isn't at a high ebb. There was over 30,000 people at the All-Ireland final this year in Croke Park to see the All-Ireland ladies football final being played. I'm following games all over the place, following for Radio Kerry Covenant. It's one of the most magnificent spectacles that you could see, the ladies football. And it's something, I'd say, that can be improved even more with more publicity and maybe more help from Croke Park, like you mentioned yourself.
Yeah, definitely. The ladies football is a great game. And, you know, we're in an era of sport for all, and sport for all means everybody. And I don't see any reason in the world why a club, anywhere, pick any club you like, should have a couple of boys football teams and no ladies teams. If the girls are encouraged to play, that's all they want, an opportunity, I think, certainly to do it. And the same applies to Camogie. I mean, Camogie is a great game too, and they should be encouraged to play. Hurling clubs should have a Camogie team. If they can't organise 15-a-side, why can't they organise a 7-a-side? You know, get them started and play. And I think the same is true for schools. Now, sort of girls' schools in the country, they should be encouraged to have ladies' football teams and maybe Camogie teams as well. So there are plenty of avenues there for us to progress, and hopefully we can do so.
Sean, you're the incoming president of the association. You're as busy now as you will be when you become president. Is it tough going? Do you get tired? You're doing a lot of travelling. Are you looking forward to it, or are you kind of dreading it and all the travel that's involved? You get tired?
Not so much tired. I'm not dreading it, but the only difficulty is you're so far from Dublin here. I mean, even, for instance, now I had to go to Dublin last Thursday. I came home and late Monday night, and I was at meetings in Croke Park with Sean McCaig and so forth. Sean was able to go home twice in that time, you know, because he's 90 miles, he drove home. But there's no way I could drive back to Kerry and up again. So that's the difficulty. It'd be difficult for my wife and family to be away from them so often. But we have discussed it, we understand it, and that's part of it, and it's for 3 years, and we'll give it everything. There's no point going to the job and then start complaining about it. You know, we are aware of what's involved. We'll give it a full commitment to whether it is going to Glen or Shanghai or Singapore, will go there to promote the game.
Finally, Sean, we're sitting here in your home in Fuss in Killarney, lovely, beautiful area just outside the town of Killarney in Southern Ireland. And tell us about your own family.
My own family, I'm married to Juliet, Legion girl. McNeice was her maiden name, and I have four children. The eldest is Padraig. He's actually just started a new city doing veterinary. And next is Mairead. She's in fifth year in local convent here. And next is Lawrence. He started in St. Brendan's College, first year this year as well. And the youngest is Juliet as well. She's only in second class, so she's looking forward to her first communion at the end of this year. So that's my immediate family, of course. I have brothers as well. I have brother Brian, he's a selector with the Limerick Senior Footballers, and they're making great progress. We're delighted to see it. And my brother Father Larry, now PP in Milltown. He was involved in Brendan's for years and trained the team that won the Hogan Cup 1992 and many other things besides. I have another brother, Father Seamus. He's out in Venezuela, in Maracaibo, as a missionary there for 25 years now and loves it. And my late brother, Brother Parry, he died in 1998. He was formerly in St. Gall's in Belfast, in De La Salle, Waterford, and he was principal in St. Faulkner's, Skibbereen. He died, fortunately. And then I have a brother, Dermot, who's a woman to come in and is teaching in Faroes. And I have one sister, Mary. She's married to Donegal man, John McGlinchey, up from Clonmany, in Coonta Donegal. So that's my family. And of course, my uncle, of course, played for Kerry 1953. The Golden Jubilee, that looking up next year. He was full forward that year. And I have another uncle, Father Brian Kelly, well known in local parts here as a, perhaps you could say, a fanatical GA man, and left everyone know that. And I had another uncle, Father Larry Kelly, he's parish priest in Kilgavin. Equally committed, but doesn't make as much noise as Father Brian. I had another uncle, Jim, he played with the Kerry juniors. I got a few runs with the seniors and played with the Tipperary seniors. He was a chemist up in Tipperary. And my father, of course, then, he played with Kilcumin and worked here in the farm all his life. And they're all very pleased with the progress, I suppose, that I've made, and particularly they're very pleased with the GA and love it, every one of them.
Sean, and then we are finishing up, but you mentioned the priests there and brothers in the family, and of course we must mention the people out in the missions, the brothers and the priests and the Franciscans and the nuns, and the nuns, because they are spreading not alone their own gospel, but they are also spreading the gospel of the association.
Yeah, and they're marvellous, you know, and probably the one link they have is with the GA again. I mean, I know my own brother now, he'd ring at home on Sunday night to see how the results went. But as you said, through the web and so forth now, they won't have to ring anymore because they'll have it as soon as ourselves. In fact, I'll finish off telling you an interesting story. I was out in Bangkok with the President of Ireland, and she's a marvellous woman for the GA and for Ireland generally, Mary McAleese. But I was speaking to the ambassador out there. He's actually a former Waterford Mount Sion hurler. And I was congratulating him on winning, and he said that he invited all his friends in to watch in the net, and unfortunately the pitch in the net broke down and they're only getting the results every 5 minutes afterwards. So he said they got to the final result 5 minutes after the final whistle when Waterford made a great breakthrough, and I'm quite sure they had a fair Irish celebration out there in Bangkok that night with Daniel Mulhall, who's the ambassador, and all the other guys out there.
Well, Sean, you might send him the following, www.terracetalkireland.com, and we'll keep him in touch and he can listen to you. Sean Kelly, as always, it was a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you, and especially in this historic interview going out in the worldwide Terrace Talk Net. So listen to me, the best of luck to yourself and to your family, of course, and always lovely to meet you.
Thank you very much, Gishy, and best luck to you again, and well done to Radio Kerry. Keep up the good work. Good morning.